Chapter 8. No one is completely perfect. Strengths and weaknesses. As the title of this book suggests, there are individuals around us who, under less favourable circumstances, we may find challenging to understand. There are others we don't understand at all, no matter what the situation is. And the most difficult to interact with are those who aren't like us, because they obviously behave incorrectly. The differences begin to become clear. You can see the general differences among the different colours. Some people are issue-oriented, and others are relation-oriented. While two of them, red and yellow, are quick to act, the greens and blues are reflective. This is often the source of everyday misunderstandings, both large and small. I will come back to this later, but I would like to take this opportunity to provide some nuances of the different core behaviour patterns that each colour represents. I'm not saying that you would call people idiots, like Sturer, who opened my eyes at the beginning of this book. However, in all honesty, all of us, on occasion, have just stood there, unable to comprehend a comment we've heard or watched someone behave in a way that is diametrically opposed to how we would have behaved. And so we believe that they're idiots. This reasoning assumes that I am always right, which of course means that the other person and their form of behaviour is automatically wrong. It's a tricky question. A wise person once said that just because you're right, I don't have to be wrong. We also tend to pay special attention to the faults and shortcomings of others. Child psychologists have argued that the things we find most shocking in the behaviour of our children are the things we recognise in ourselves, but wish we didn't do. So who decides what kind of behaviour is right and wrong? Time for a real cliche. On the one hand, no one is perfect. There you go, a real platitude. But really, there are no perfect human beings. No one is without faults or shortcomings. In my youth, I was constantly looking for a role model who could become my mentor in life. That person, a man or woman, completely free from shortcomings. But I never found one. I still haven't seen any trace of this elusive, perfect human. And of course, that's the way it is. We live with our shortcomings and make the best of things. On the other hand, when we think someone is an idiot, is it really because of their faults and shortcomings, or have we failed to understand them? An attribute that may be useful in some situations is unsuitable in others. It's important to remember that communication usually takes place on the recipient's terms. Whatever people's judgment of me may be, that is the way they perceive me, regardless of what I really meant or intended. As always, it's all about self-awareness. Good qualities can become drawbacks in the wrong circumstances, no matter what the quality is. Quick review of core behaviour patterns. Reds are quick and more than happy to take command if needed. They make things happen. However, when they get going, they become control freaks and can be hopeless to deal with. And they repeatedly trample on people's toes. Yellows can be amusing, creative, and elevate the mood regardless of who they're with. However, when they're given unlimited space, they will consume all the oxygen in the room. They won't allow anyone into a conversation, and their stories will reflect reality less and less. The friendly greens are easy to hang out with because they're so pleasant and genuinely care for others. Unfortunately, they can be too wishy-washy and unclear. Anyone who never takes a stand eventually becomes difficult to handle. You don't know where they really stand, and indecision kills the energy in other people. The analytical blues are calm, level-headed, and think before they speak. Their ability to keep a cool head is undoubtedly an enviable quality for all who aren't capable of doing that. However, blues critical thinking can easily turn to suspicion and questioning those around them. Everything can become suspect and sinister. In the following sections, I deal with how people might perceive the weaknesses of certain behaviour patterns. Naturally, this is a sensitive area and can be easily misunderstood. When I coach individuals, this is usually where things can get messy. So, as you listen on, be aware that much is in the eye of the beholder. Who is right and who is wrong? The behaviour patterns I'm talking about are described as other people may perceive them, even if the intention of the person who just made a fool of himself might have been completely different. One thing I know for sure regarding the different colours is that each colour evaluates themselves in different ways. Reds and yellows tend to inflate their strengths and believe that they have no weaknesses. They have powerful egos, and a great part of their success can probably be attributed to the fact that they don't get bogged down in faults and shortcomings, but instead look for opportunities and good news. Clearly, this can't be maintained over time. Conversely, greens and blues usually exaggerate their weaknesses, and in certain cases, even ignore their strengths. The consequences are clear. When you give positive feedback to a green or a blue, they sometimes appear to be immune to it and change the subject to something that went seriously wrong. Obviously, this is highly unproductive. Well, are we ready to go? How red people are perceived. If you ask other people about reds, you might get a different picture from the one the red gives of himself. What a surprise. My own private research shows that reds are surrounded by more idiots than the rest of us. Many people will agree with what you've heard up to now about reds, but I have also heard other comments. Usually, they express this when the red is not in the room, because they're afraid of his fiery temper. You've heard him say that he wants to hear the truth. Over the years, he's bellowed into our ears, "Say what you think." But as soon as you do, you find yourself in the middle of a heated discussion with an angry red. This means that what you're going to hear now will often be completely new for many reds. Not many of us have ever been able to make these points to a red before. It takes way too much energy. Some people say that reds are just belligerent, arrogant, and egotistical. They're perceived as unyielding, impatient, aggressive, and controlling. I don't think this is necessarily correct. But I've even heard people speak about people with red behaviour as dictatorial and tyrannical. Suddenly the picture isn't as flattering. The born leader reveals his blemished side. First of all, let me say this. Nothing said previously would necessarily bother a red, because he is more task-oriented than relationship-oriented. Besides, everyone else is wrong. But let's see what everyone else has to say. Why does everything take so long? Can't you speed things up a bit? Well, what can you say? A person willing to step outside any regulatory framework to get ahead is nothing if not impatient. When the usual official channels take too long, a red will scale over a few levels of decision makers and expeditiously look for the person who really calls the shots. The first example that comes to mind was the traffic in my beautiful capital city. Sure, many locals are in more of a hurry than the national average when they sit behind the wheel. There are statistics about this. But since we're talking about red behaviour, I'd like to tell you about a colleague I had a few years ago. Bjorn and I used a car as our principal means of transport in and around the city. It simply took too long to use public transport. Bjorn lost his license every so often because of his somewhat liberal approach to speed limits. He lived far outside the city, and the journey into the office, about 20 miles away, could take about 40 minutes. That was on a good day. It could just as easily take an hour and a half. Bjorn rarely felt the need to adjust his driving according to the flow of traffic. His opinion was that there was no reason for him to follow every single traffic rule. The posted speed limits here and there, 50, 60 and so on, they were mostly recommendations. They didn't apply to him. They were there for people who didn't really know how to drive a car. On one occasion, I was sitting in the office with a few colleagues, having a cup of coffee, discussing the rather serious traffic situation. It felt as if the city was on the verge of a traffic infarction. Bjorn didn't know what we were talking about. He wasn't aware of the problem at all. On the contrary, he felt that the traffic hadn't been bad lately. When we questioned him a bit more, it turned out that he usually drove in the bus lane all the way for over 20 miles. It was so much quicker that way. Bjorn even maintained that this was okay. You can even get a permit for the bus lane. That's what he did, and it cost him about $140 a month. About every 4 weeks, the police stopped him. But it was worth it. Just imagine how much time he saved. And all it cost him was the fines. He felt it was a good deal. This story illustrates quite clearly how red behaviour works. They know just as well as everyone else that it's wrong to break the rules. However, since it's quicker that way, they do it anyway. Reds are notorious rule breakers. Once again, I would like to remind you of their intentions. To get the job done. Reds have no problem taking one or two shortcuts, as long as it's about getting things done. With such a generous approach to regulations and rules, you'll definitely arrive faster. I would even say that a red is often so fast that if something were to go wrong, he would still manage to redo the project. At the same time, no one else ever really knows what's going to happen. I am not screaming. I'm not angry. Ah! Because the way reds communicate is so blunt and so direct, many perceive them as aggressive. This is logical. But at the same time, this perception varies, depending on who becomes the victim of the red's forceful points of view. For instance, in Sweden, it's not acceptable to behave in the kind of confrontational manner that would be fine in Germany or France. I'm not saying that people quarrel more in these countries, but that they have a slightly different approach to conflicts. Just imagine. In many workplaces, people are encouraged to be candid and have open communication. What does this really mean? It's easy to interpret it as meaning we should all be honest with one another and just say whatever we think, right? We want to have open and forthright dialogue. That's excellent. For any organisation to be efficient, it's necessary to have straightforward communication about things that are important. So, who excels at frank communication and can receive the same without getting cranky? Answer: no one. Besides Reds, of course. For them, this is a non-issue. Why are we even talking about communication? It's obvious that you say what you think. Many people find this stressful. To constantly have the truth pushed into your face can be onerous if you have difficulty taking it. My goal here isn't to define what's right or wrong. I only want to establish that all of us are different. So why do we sometimes perceive red behaviour as threatening and belligerent? Could it be that they don't give up right away? That they like to argue and debate even small matters if they find them important? That they'll raise their voices, glare daggers at people, and pound their fists on the table if it suits them? That sometimes they express themselves rather rudely? Imagine the following scenario. You have a project, something that you've spent a few days on, or maybe even weeks. You begin to doubt yourself. Have you succeeded at your work? Is it as good as you wanted it to be? Would you dare show it to the client as it is now? Or should you ask for some feedback from someone who you know will give you an honest answer? Just then, a red comes sauntering by, and you take the chance. You are fully aware that this colleague, spouse, friend, cousin, neighbour, will be honest. You ask for a frank opinion. With a degree of pride in your voice, you show him what you've accomplished, and you go through your process step by step. Without you noticing, the red becomes impatient, because he's already decided what his opinion is, and he's getting tired of you doing all the talking for so long. With a wave of his hand that effectively silences you, the red says, "It doesn't look that good. I don't really like what you've done here. In fact, it looks pretty rough. I'm amazed that you didn't do better than this. I think you have to redo the whole thing from start to finish." Then he leaves without thinking any more about it. You're left there, feeling forlorn and crushed, regardless of what colour you are. Exaggerated? Can this happen in real life? At this stage, if you believe that such nasty people don't really exist, then you've never met a genuine red. Or the reds you have met have essentially learned how to be dishonest. Think about it. What's the purpose of cutting a person down to size so completely? What were the red's intentions? It was to do exactly what you asked. You wanted an honest opinion. "Say exactly what you think," you said. It's possible you even added, "I won't be angry, sad, disappointed, suicidal." "Be prepared," says the red, "because here it comes." By asking for an honest opinion, you released a flood of brutal candour. But you'll survive. Perhaps with your self-confidence a little waterlogged and your ego utterly drowned. As a consultant, I've explained countless times that when a red goes all out on an issue that's important to him, an issue on which he does not intend to give up, well, the storm will be brutal. If you're afraid of conflict, then you shouldn't put yourself in that situation. A red has no problem with conflict. Reds don't consciously create conflict. But a refreshing quarrel every now and then can be a good thing, don't you think? It's just another way to communicate. A little tip. The worst thing you can do once you get into a conflict with a red is back off. That tactic can cause you serious problems, More on that later. What are you doing over there? I can see what you're not doing. What's behind the need to control? Simply put, the desire for control is a phenomenon where an individual needs to have power over a situation in which either groups or individuals are present. Those who have control needs often feel extremely uneasy about having to adapt themselves to a group or a situation and will eagerly come up with various strategies to avoid this. A common form of behaviour is to talk constantly, interrupting and ignoring others in order to maintain control over the conversation. Reds can probably be perceived as extremely overbearing, but it's important to note they're interested in controlling those around them, but not in controlling every specific detail of a situation. Attention to or control over detail isn't something we can accuse Reds of. But it is important for a Red to feel that he can influence what people do and how they intend to act on certain specific issues. At the heart of this need for control is a belief that they know more than anyone else. And because a Red feels he knows best, he will keep tabs on everyone around him to ensure that they all do the right thing. The advantage for a Red is that he gets everything done his way. The disadvantage is obvious. Everyone else feels controlled. Some people think it's a good thing when someone else makes the decisions and holds the baton, but others feel limited and just want to escape. Many years ago, I worked for a company in which one of the middle managers was quite red. She was also a bit blue. When she delegated tasks to the employees, the effect was quite amusing. She usually had no problem relinquishing certain things. She was even good at delegating enjoyable tasks, something many executives can find difficult. However, since she was a red, she was very quick in thought and action. In practice, this meant that she hung around after she delegated a specific task. And if the task wasn't done immediately, she would simply go and do it herself. When the employee in question got to that item on his to-do list, he often discovered that it had already been done. Note, the deadline hadn't been reached yet. Because this middle manager was red-blue, she did a much better job than what the employee would have had he been given the chance. Red means fast. Blue means high quality in implementation. Unfortunately, criticism of the employee's sluggishness was not slow in coming. As the blue part of this manager was precise with the details, and the red part gave criticism very readily, she was perceived as quite rigid. Which brings us on to the next section. I try to care about you, but it would help if you were a little more interesting. Have you ever met a person completely without feelings? No, I thought so. Once again, Reds are not typical relational people. Nothing wrong with that, as long as the person you're communicating with has the same focus as you. But if a Red speaks to a pronounced relational person, like a yellow or a green, he can be perceived as very cold-hearted or inhuman. Let me illustrate this with an example from my own personal experience. I had a colleague whom I always appreciated very much. Notice that I start with the positives to avoid ruffling feathers. Very Swedish of me. And still have great respect for as a professional, but also as a good friend. Okay, it's the infamous Bjorn again. A few years ago, we were having a tough period in the company. fall had been a difficult and strenuous time. Long days, late nights, and frequent weekend work. We'd worn ourselves out. We had worn one another out. We had worn out our respective families. We were on our knees. We really deserved a quiet and restful holiday season. For the company holiday party, we went to a Japanese restaurant. We'd taken our shoes off and were sitting on cushions, each holding a glass of sake in his hands. In typical Swedish fashion, we looked at the menus while, at the same time, keeping an eye on what the others were thinking of ordering. Of course, most of us didn't want to order something that no one else chose. Except for Bjorn. He glanced quickly through the menu and declared what he had in mind. He was ready now and quickly grew weary of those of us who hadn't decided yet. Needing something to do, he started a conversation. At the time, my daughter had just changed schools, and Bjorn was inquisitive. How did everything go with the new school? How's the little lassie doing? Pleasantly surprised by his concern for my daughter, I started to tell him. After about 20 seconds, I noted that Bjorn's eyes began to wander. He looked around the restaurant with a facial expression that said, "Why is he telling me this?" He looked at me with a smile, I interpreted as, "You know me. You know how I function. I don't actually want to talk any more about that." And he quickly began talking about something completely different. Ordinarily, I should have been a little bit offended, maybe even insulted. How can anyone be so insensitive? Especially when the other person is talking about something that he himself inquired about. Does this mean that Bjorn is cold-hearted? Or that he cares nothing for other people? Not at all. He cares just as much as anyone else. But when he realised that everything was fine with my daughter, he simply lost interest. In usual fashion, he announced that the channel of communication was closed. Instead of sitting there hemming and hawing, pretending to be interested in more or less meaningless details, he said exactly what he felt. Remember that we're talking about interpretations and perceptions here. The intention behind a particular behaviour is one thing. How we as recipients perceive it is another. Personally, I just wanted to laugh the whole thing off, because I knew Bjorn very well. I knew that he would never dream of hurting anyone deliberately. When he tramples on people's toes from time to time, it's never intentional. It just happens. In reality, he's one of the warmest and most generous people I've ever met. It's just that you have to know him to understand this. What would have been the correct answer to Bjorn's question about my daughter? Great. It would have been enough. It takes strength to be alone, and I'm the strongest of you all. The word egotistic comes from the Latin word ego, meaning I. My I is therefore my ego. Linguistically, we have consequently chosen to put some kind of equal sign between people with strong egos and being selfish. Naturally, there are many people in our world who are selfish and egotistical. The world is teeming with them. Again, I want you to remember that we're speaking here about perceived behaviour. If we look at how a red communicates, we can understand why many perceive him as egotistic. I think we should accept this proposal. I want that assignment. This is what I think about it. I have a good idea. Will we do this my way or the wrong way? Add a sharp eye and distinctive body language, and you will see someone who will take what he wants. He will fight for his interests. He will tell everyone who will listen that he's capable of doing whatever he undertakes. Some people, especially Greens, find that this I form of speaking is unsettling. A Red's I message occupies their minds. They share this trait with Yellows, who also have strong egos. But we've learned to take care of one another. We know that being solitary is not the same thing as being strong, that we need one another to survive. Cooperation is the model, and I've preached this for over two decades. So we think it's egotistic when Reds speak only about themselves. They make sure to help themselves before helping others. They're often willing to trample on someone else if they see an opportunity to advance themselves. They may not do this consciously, but the effect is the same. Reds often come out the winners in discussions. They see this as a natural part of a conversation. They always know best and will assert that everyone else is wrong. It suits their ego to behave this way. The aftermath of this method is that they lose friends. People can dislike them, and they're cut off from information because no one wants them in the group. Once they've noticed this, they may well just decide that all the other people are idiots. A few years ago, I was one of six people who was seated at the table having an evening meal. In some anguish, a man, Green Blue, told me he was not feeling well. He couldn't live up to the responsibilities his employer laid on his shoulders. He was hard-pressed by his burdensome workload, and he found it difficult to sleep at night. This caused even more stress for him, because he knew that if he didn't get a good night's rest, it would be even harder for him to perform at work. His wife, sitting beside him, tried to hide her discomfort. The situation was certainly not comfortable for anyone in the room. Everyone at the table offered encouraging remarks, along with cautious questions about how he thought he might be able to reverse the difficult situation. We all expressed our support, as far as we could. Except for the Red. After 10 minutes, the only Red at the table finally had enough and tore into the distraught, stressed-out little devil. The Red's analysis was as clear as day. "I think you complain too much. You're just earning your salary. I've never been sick, and I think people worry too much. I would never end up in your situation, and I really think you should pull yourself together." What a dinner that was. Let's be honest. Reds are the ones who always believe they're surrounded by idiots. How yellow people are perceived. Funny, entertaining, and almost divinely positive. Absolutely. Again, this is their own interpretation. If you ask other people about yellows, you may well get a somewhat different picture. Many people will agree with what you've heard up to now, but you will also hear other comments. It's especially fun to ask the Blues. They will say that yellows are selfish, superficial, and overly self-confident. Someone else will say that they talk too much and are bad listeners. Combine that with the observation that they can be distracted and careless, suddenly the picture is not as flattering. When a yellow hears these comments, one of two things can happen. Either he gets deeply distressed and genuinely hurt, or he sets off a ferocious argument. It depends. What's striking is that over time, none of this criticism will really torment a yellow very much. On the one hand, he's a bad listener, And on the other hand, he has what some psychologists might call a selective memory. He simply forgets the difficult bits. And with his positive ethos, he finds it easy to say to himself that he doesn't have any faults or shortcomings. Let's have a look at what yellows struggle with, even if they don't always know it. Hello, anyone there? Listen to what happened to me. You want to know, right? At the beginning of this chapter, I pointed out that yellows are very good communicators. I would like to repeat that now. Yellows are very good communicators, with an emphasis on very. None of the other colours come close to the yellows' ease in finding words, expressing themselves, and telling a story. It comes so easily, so simply, so effortlessly, that you can't help being impressed. It's common knowledge that most people don't like speaking in front of others. They get heart palpitations and sweaty palms, terrified of making fools of themselves. This is totally alien to yellows. Making fools of themselves isn't part of the deal. And if the improbable were to happen, you could always laugh it off with another amusing anecdote. However, it may be too much of a good thing. Regardless of what you're good at, there is a limit, a time to break off. Yellows, especially those without self-awareness, don't have such a limit. It would never even occur to them to wrap up. If they have something to say, out it comes. The fact that no one else thinks it's important is neither here nor there. A yellow behaves exactly like most people. He does what he's good at. And he's good at talking. There are countless examples of yellows who completely dominate a conversation. Then add a hefty dose of poor listening and an interesting or one-sided communication takes place. Many people become hugely frustrated by this limitless verbosity. It's often perceived as egocentrism. The terms windbag, verbal diarrhea, and motor mouth were more than likely coined with yellows in mind. Countless times I've experienced the following. A group of people are sitting around a boardroom table. The top dog in the room expresses an idea. It can be about anything at all. When the time comes for comments, all the yellows will reinforce the idea by repeating the exact same thing, possibly with their own words. I would like to say to the women listening to this that I am aware of the fact that this is more male behaviour than female. Why do they do that? Well, first, it's important to signal when you're in agreement, and second, they can say it so much better. A few years ago, I was with a management team studying group dynamics. I had just purchased a cell phone with a stopwatch. Using this, I could time who had spoken in the group and for how long. In the room were the CEO and his seven closest associates. Peter, the sales manager, was really yellow, and he had only had one point of the 19 on the agenda. Take a good look at the ratio. 1 to 19. This represents around 5.3% of the agenda. The CEO opened the meeting. But pretty soon, a clear pattern emerged. Peter had opinions about every single item on the agenda. I used my stopwatch and was fascinated by what I saw. He spoke 69% of the time. Yes, it's true. 31% went to the other seven, including the CEO himself. If you're a yellow, you may have already charged on ahead in this book, because you possibly recognised yourself and thought that this was a very unfair example. Everyone else is wondering how that's even possible. How can one person dominate the conversation so fully? It's possible because yellows have no problems delivering opinions, views, and advice, regardless of whether they know anything about the subject or not. A yellow has a generous approach to his own ability. When an idea pops up in his head, he simply opens his mouth. People say that for reds, thought and action are the same thing. For yellows, I would suggest the idea that thought and speech are interrelated. What yellows share is often completely unprocessed material that just tumbles out of the big opening on their faces. Sure, it might be well thought out, but it's usually not. What's most deceptive is that almost without exception, it sounds very good. Yellows know a thing or two about presenting an idea so that it always sounds fantastic. If you're unfamiliar with this particular person, you may very well take everything he says as true. A serious mistake. Very often, a yellow is both entertaining and inspiring. And as I said, they can inspire people to new ideas. But should you get into a conversation with a yellow, you need to be observant so that when he catches his breath, you can quickly insert a comment. Or simply close the meeting. I know it looks messy, but there's a method to the madness. A yellow would hardly admit that he's careless, but he has no natural way to keep track of things. He finds working in a structured way boring. Then you have to fit the mould and follow the template. If there's anything that yellows avoid, it's feeling controlled by fixed systems. The solution is to keep everything in your head, which doesn't work. It's not possible to remember everything. So, inevitably, the yellow forgets and those around him think he's careless. Missed appointments, forgotten deadlines, and half-finished projects, all because once his mind has finished the task, he doesn't go backwards. He goes forward, leaps to the next project, deals with other things. Details. To complete a project, you usually need to be precise about details. Yellows don't like keeping track of details. I would even venture to say that they're not interested in details. They paint with broad strokes. Generally, yellows are very good at launching things. They're resourceful, and with boundless creativity at their disposal, they can kick off various kinds of projects. But they're not as good at finishing things. Finishing anything 100% requires an ability to concentrate that a yellow rarely possesses. He gets tired and moves on. And so we think that he's careless. He thinks that his work is good enough. My goodness, why worry about trifles? This turned out quite well after all. The fact that threads are hanging from the shirt or that the document is full of spelling errors is not as important as thinking up new things. This is repeated in many different spheres. I have a few acquaintances who are hopeless at keeping time. They're always pleased and excited to think things up, but they're optimists when it comes to time. It makes absolutely no difference what time you suggest. They will not be on time. 7 o'clock, 7:30, or 8. It's unimportant. They're late regardless. And when they talk about it, they haggle down their late arrival from 45 minutes to a little over 15 minutes. After a while, they actually believe it themselves. But it doesn't matter. The rest of us wait patiently because their presence will be the highlight of the evening. Look, I can juggle all the balls at the same time. We need to talk a little about Yellow's inability to concentrate. He's always prepared for new experiences. This is the downside to the incredible openness Yellows have for new things, ideas, and impressions. There are so many new things. And because new is synonymous with good for a Yellow, it's best that something new happens all the time. Otherwise, our Yellow friend will lose focus. He can't be bothered listening to the whole story, the background and all the details and facts that may actually be relevant. It's not interesting to him. And he will lose his concentration. What does he do then? Simple. Something else. He throws up another ball to juggle. The problem with all these balls is that he might be able to keep them in the air for a while, but he can't get them down into the right box at the right time. Instead, he leaves the room and the juggled balls tumble down right into someone else's lap. In a meeting, he may very well start playing with his mobile phone or his computer, or will start chatting to the person beside him. Softly at first, thinking that no one will notice anything. It's not true, of course. Everyone gets quite irritated. But if no one says anything, he'll just continue. Here, Yellows are like little children. They're good at testing the limits. They continue until someone becomes too angry and puts his foot down. And of course, then, the Yellow feels hurt. He just wanted to... The way Yellows often quickly get bored can have far greater consequences than a little disruptive behaviour during meetings. They're not good at everyday trivial things, like administration and follow-ups. As usual, most Yellows would contest what I just wrote. In their own eyes, they are the masters even here. But if we consider the ability to follow up, this could be a serious threat to the effective implementation of a project. New project, great. Put together a new and dynamic team full of interesting people. Check. Get everything going and develop ideas and concepts. Are you kidding? Already done that. Working like crazy in the beginning to really get things sped up? Yep. But then, following up on what is actually happening or not happening in a project is extremely boring. That means looking backwards. That's dull, and it won't happen. A Yellow can't keep his concentration long enough to follow through. He would rather persuade himself that it's important to have confidence in people and just trust that the project gets done. A funny example happened once when I coached sales reps at a large commercial TV channel. I sat with the female seller, a clever young woman who made big business deals. We had identified some weaknesses in her behaviour profile after she'd struggled to convince me that even bad traits could be quite good, and now started to make a plan for how she would proceed in her personal development. It began to fall apart on the first point. When would she begin? She couldn't start that day, because it was already past 3 PM, and tomorrow was full of meetings. It had to be next week. But she was away then. Maybe the week after that. She would check her calendar and see. She had lost the match before she'd even begun. Me, me, me! Yellows aren't necessarily more selfish than others, but they always seem to be. Why? Mostly because of their dialogue, since they primarily talk about themselves. And when other people are not sufficiently interesting and exciting, a yellow will interrupt and guide the topic towards something far more interesting. Not infrequently himself. I remember a seller I encountered during a conference with a pharmaceutical company a few years ago. Gustav exhibited all of the less successful aspects of yellow behaviour. And the problem was that he was completely unaware of it. He very rarely spoke about anything but himself and the things he had done. And he behaved as if he were the one who was leading the conference and not me. I have my methods to deal with these boys, but it's amusing to study them for a while before I adjust their behaviour with a few choice words during the first break. A few examples. Every time I put a question to the group, Gustav answered. These quick answers would have indicated engagement if it had not been for the fact that he was often actually spewing nonsense. He simply said the things that popped into his head. He couldn't keep his thoughts in his own head, and everything just tumbled out. When I directed my attention to one of Gustav's colleagues instead of him, he simply leaned into my field of vision and continued talking. When I began directing questions to specific people in the room, simply calling them by name, Gustav answered anyway. Pretty impressive, right? He would speak for a while and then ask Sven, "That's what you were going to say, right, Sven?" Sven just shook his head. He was used to this. Gustav continued like that the whole morning before I could rein him in. He just charged in whenever there was a gap or a few seconds' silence. He never allowed anyone to speak, and everything he said was to be taken as gospel truth. He dominated the room without even thinking about the other 19 people. The funny thing was that everyone was aware of what was going on, but no one had the energy to stand up to Gustav. They just stared at me with slight desperation in their eyes, hoping that I had some way of silencing him. During lunch, he proclaimed far and wide, so that everyone heard it, that he thought the conference was going very well. By that point, the majority of the group hated the very sound of his voice. They could barely put up with him. To save them from their suffering, I had to have a quick feedback intervention with him during the coffee break. Something you'll learn more about when I discuss giving feedback.